Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
Today we're visiting with Executive Chef Brian Sinoskis of the Star Diner in Marshall, North Carolina. Brian, I know everybody out in Radio Land wants to hear all about you, where you came from, how you got started, how you come to be here in Marshall and the Star Diner. So give us your story.
My story begins in Toms River, New Jersey. I was born to Joe and Karen there, grew up living on the beach in Central Jersey, kind of a nice spot, great place to be a kid in the 70s. And decided to go to culinary school after high school at Johnston Wales in Providence, Rhode Island. Spent a couple years there and had a real good time. Providence is a nice town. After which, I moved down to Charlotte, North Carolina with my college roommate and kind of got my first real taste of the South and kind of was digging on that. Spent some time traveling, went out to Utah for that one season of being a ski bum type of thing. Turned into 5 years working in hotels and ski resorts and things like that. So the West was really nice. That was my first taste of really mountain living. I always thought growing up that the ocean was my true calling and the real, you know, body and spirit behind me. But once I got the energy from the mountains, it was pretty clear that was the choice to be. After the time in Utah, I was heading back to the East Coast, and said roommate from Charlotte had moved up to Asheville and was opening a restaurant. So the first story was, hey, do you have a couch I can crash on for a while? And I was like, do you have a driveway I can park my Volkswagen van in and use your shower for a while until I get going? So I moved to Asheville in 1995, and pretty much 2 days in, knew it was going to be home. Got settled in, worked at Magnolia's Roll Bar and Grill for about 5 years. Then 2000, Tupahani Cafe opened up. We did that for 15 years, and so I decided to take a little hiatus. I spent a lot of time traveling and opening restaurants with them, and I've been the executive chef for 15 years and was ready for something a little different and time off spent with my kids. I was doing a lot of traveling. And after some well-deserved break and some rest time and family time, started getting back into what was going to be next. And I like the idea of getting back into the dinner thing, a little slower service, a little more fine dining aspect to it. And my wife knew of Bud in this place he owns here called the Star Diner. And he'd been working on it for about 10 years.
My wife and I moved here 10 years ago, and we've been watching this place board by board, brick by brick.
And he said to me, he's like, well, you know, it's funny you call this time because I've just started looking for a chef, someone to run this place. So I was like, neat. Came down and met him, and we kind of talked about his vision for the building, you know, the late 30s motif and the music to go along with it and just the unassuming look from outside with the old gas station to coming into white tablecloths and good heavy silverware and nice, you know, glass. So he kind of told me about it. I was like, neat, you know. So I went home and wrote up a couple menus of things that, you know, I saw fit the bill for it. And next day he was like, well, this is great. You know, when can you start doing that? And I was like, well, you know, I really wasn't quite ready to go back to work yet. But, you know, not to mention, that means probably not a bad time. It's getting on to be about December here. I was like, okay. So we got the building up and running, finished building the nice little patio out back with the koi pond, which was all open air when I got here. So I was like, you know, but I think we need more than four tables to really, you know, make this happen. So we're able to put that in, get another five tables out of it. Still very modest, nine tables, but it goes well with the food we're trying to represent here, which is craft and takes a lot of time. You can only do so many people at one time with that. So it turns out very well.
So what's your seating capacity in the place here?
26 seats.
26 seats. Talk to me just a little bit about some of the things you did in the past, how you became executive chef.
In German, the word chef means boss. Mm. So just being chef is funny. You know, and I have lots of titles, kitchen manager, chef, working chef, sous chef, executive sous chef, banquet chef, you know, on down the line. And with doing that, you know, I worked my way up. I started in a place called Jack Baker's Lobster Shanty in New Jersey. Right at, you know, as soon as I got my worker's permit at 16, Started washing dishes like every good chef should.
16.
16, yeah.
Wow. So, that was a young start.
Yeah, you know how to do everything from start to finish in that and worked my way up through. You know, next job's like, hey, you're good at this, and I'm going back and start boiling some lobsters. Okay, next step. Now you're going to start frying shrimp, and then you're on saute, and then you're running what we call the wheel, which is reading the tickets and organizing everyone else. With becoming the chef and being executive chef comes with, you know, confidence, creativity, and being able to be in charge, be able to lead people. You know, we always talk about restaurant business a lot like going to war, because you get in there and you build really tight bonds. And when stuff starts going, you know, it's going. There's no stopping. So you got to be able to organize it, think fast, and you're working in the heat. You know, lots of dangerous tools back there and everything. So it takes a lot of, you know, precision and care, and you have to be able to ebb and flow with the people you're working with.
So is it you and some other helpers? How many do you have here?
I have my chef, Will Hogenkamp, works with me, and we're the only two that work in the kitchen.
Okay.
I do have a dishwasher, and we have three servers who kind of rotate doing a host shift, and then we have a part-time host as well.
Okay.
But it's really just the seven of us.
So talk to me just a little bit about the Star Diner, the location. When you first came here and you saw this little town of Marshall, and you were thinking about an upscale restaurant, I mean, what crossed your mind on that?
Well, I thought it was a great idea. Everyone else told us that they thought we were crazy. Originally, Bud was going to envision this to be into a lunch place. But Marshall's, you know, every place that is a restaurant here serves lunch, and not all do dinner. And few of them do, you know, fine service and fine dining type of dinner. So we knew we had something, and what we wanted to create was something that Marshall did not have.
Sure.
We didn't want to be just another, you know, step down the block.
Yeah. Brian, when you take a look at dinner only, there's some things there that do allow you some latitude that other places wouldn't have with breakfast and lunch. For example, you got more time during the day to prepare,
yeah,
right? You get a little more time to think and organize stuff. And your dinner hours run from when to when?
5:30 till about 9.
Five to nine.
We kind of stay open as the business warrants it.
But. Sure. Okay, so I know from being here 10 years, a little over, that we watch some restaurants come and go. And I noticed that around the region, over in Weaverville and some other places, they have restaurants that do like a fine diner thing, maybe once a quarter, or once every month or so, something like that. But nothing consistently every evening like here.
Right.
So you look like you've got a decent clientele built up now?
We have, yes. You know, we started out, we opened February 1st, which is probably the worst possible time in this area to open.
Why is that?
But, well, it's just, in the, you know, January and February are typically the slowest restaurant months in our region.
Yeah.
It's just cold. People are not, you know, digging on going out so much. And to be in Marshall, which you don't get a lot of tourism, and Marshall has a, you know, small population as it is. So, but that was really good because I got to know the people of Marshall. Mm-hmm. You know, we opened with a couple of dry runs, which had people come in and be our guests for the evening and try food. So we could basically practice because we had a new restaurant, new team working together, new menu.
New tools in the kitchen.
Yeah, new tools. So I wanted to, you know, have people, in case everything wasn't perfect or took a long time, you give it for free and let them try it. And we invited most of the shop owners on Main Street here to come up. And it was a great way to kind of kick it off.
Sure.
So people, you know, and it was all just word of mouth. We haven't done any advertising except a little Instagram, a little bit of Facebook. But we don't put, I don't have any really marketing dollars towards, you know, billboards or anything like the big boys do.
Well, customer references is absolutely the best advertising. I know that from being in business a lot of years.
Yeah, and it's been working out well. Like I said, I got to know the people of Marshall, and they became regular customers. I got to recognize the faces and see them, you know, and got people in the vibe of making reservations, because once we fill up, tables usually takes about 2 hours to turn, so, you know, there's not a lot of walk-in capacity. Now and again it works out, but we fill up pretty much about every night now, which has been great.
Well, when you get to the point where you're going to have too much business here, you think, what do you do next?
I don't know. You have another space down the road. Bud does, I should say. Bud is the owner of the building. So we've been talking about maybe doing something with that, of private dining space or event space type of thing. So,
okay.
But for right now, you know, we've just finally really got into our groove here. So I'm ready to continue just making this be the best it can be.
We live back on top of the mountain here, and quite frankly, I hear about your place about every week or so. You're doing something right. You're getting a lot of good connections with people, and they really like it and come back. I haven't heard any negatives on the airwaves at all and talking to people on the phone in person. So you're doing a good thing. Yeah. Whatever you're doing. Don't know what it is yet, but I'm going to find out.
My wife Kate works up here with me now as well. She didn't start out doing it. She was just kind of helped me do some things. But we had a little bit of turnover in the beginning, and then she was able to jump in. And we found out that it's easier to find a nanny to watch your kids than it is to find a really good restaurant help. And she's a great personality, so she's out here in the front. Because it used to be that we were really slow in the beginning. I could spend a lot more time in the dining room talking to tables and hanging out. But as we get busier, and there's only two of us back there, it keeps you preoccupied. So I like having her out here doing it. She's great.
How did you and Kate connect?
We met at Tupelo Honey Cafe.
Okay.
And I was the chef there, and she was a host, busser, server, manager, all down the chain of events there. So
good all-around experience.
Yeah.
You folks live in the Marshall area?
We live in Asheville. We're off the Lester Highway.
Seriously? Yeah. That's a good commute for you to come up here to little old Marshall.
It's about 25 or 30 minutes, but it's nice. In the morning gives me time to kind of get my agenda together.
Yeah.
You know, on the way home, I'd rather be boom home, but...
Well, for a radio audience, just so you know, I'm sitting here at the bar in one of the dining rooms here at the Star Diner, looking out at the French Broad River flowing by, and I think there's a railroad track out there somewhere.
Yeah, the track's only about literally seven feet behind the buildings.
Oh my goodness, it's almost at eye level.
Yeah, and when it's going south, it doesn't start blowing its horn to right about when it gets to this first window, so it can be a little bit of a jumpy experience at times. But there's every time it goes by, I mean, the commotion in the dining room is just great. People love it. It's just another one of the quirks of this, you know?
Well, the ambiance always helps to make something, and, you know, I can't recall in my lifetime, I can't recall being in a restaurant where the train passes within 5 feet of the wall where you're sitting.
Yeah.
I don't ever remember having that experience. I can see how that just would make a great story. Great story. Well, super. Okay, so when Kate comes into work, you guys show up, what, an hour ahead of time to get things going? You're down here now.
No, it's a funny thing. You know, we talked about doing lunch, but, you know, it takes me. I generally come in anywhere between 9 and noon, depending on if there's deliveries to receive or what the prep list is like. But I'm always, by noon, well into working for the day. So it takes me that long to get everything ready for each night. You know, we have a very small storage facility, so we're re-prepping things every day to keep it going, keep it fresh, which is great. So, and then Will comes in a little bit after I do, and he makes all the desserts. We have a straight prep day on Tuesdays where he comes in and basically makes the desserts and gets stocks and sauces and the main mother sauce things kind of built up. And then all the fresh ingredients are reproduced every day. So it takes us a good bit of time and skill to get done.
Well, do you buy a lot of local foods?
I buy local foods when they're right and when they're wrong. You know, mostly
in season,
produce, you know, and we use, you know, some local places. We've been using a lot of Sugar Creek Meats lately. It's a nice farm out in Lester.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a lot of, you know, pork products from him. And, you know, I spend a lot of time going to farmers market and different markets around, and random people would just stop by with things, you know, buy some rhubarb from Kathy over here, and I'll get, you know, some garlic from this other guy down the road, and it's kind of a nice experience that way. And being small, you know, I don't use any large quantities of anything, so it's nice to be able to appeal to a small farmer who may have 3 pounds of oyster mushrooms, and that's perfect for me on a Wednesday, you know.
Well, Brian, we're going to take a break at this point in time, and we'll get back at things in just a few minutes, so hang on, everybody. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Peggy Patterson's Pig's Milk Cheese. Peggy warned me that some city folks listening to this program will laugh at the whole idea of pig's milk cheese. Peggy tells me that pigs produce less milk in comparison to cows. For example, pigs give about 13 pounds of milk a day compared to a cow that will produce about 65 pounds a day. Pigs also have a limited milk ejection time of about 16 seconds, so you have to be quick. Peggy says that it takes about 4 people with small cups to milk her pigs, and you only get about a half a cup each milking. Pigs have around 14 small teats compared to a cow's 4. So in order to collect 10 quarts, which is needed for about 2 pounds of cheese, it takes at least 40 hours of milking. Peggy makes 1-pound cheese wheels, so she needs a lot of pig's milk. Peggy complains every now and then that her sows are very difficult to milk. Sometimes her sows kick the cups out of the milker's hands. Occasionally, one of her milkers gets bitten by an angry sow. Last year, Mary Lou lost her little finger when the sow she was milking got upset. But Peggy is not easily discouraged. She loves the cheese that she makes from pig's milk and is on a quest to get everyone else to like it too. But honestly, folks, after tasting it, I think pig's milk is gamey. And the cheese made from the pig's milk is an intense version of that gaminess. But, on the other hand, I do have neighbors here in the mountains who absolutely love the gaminess flavor. Peggy says, although pig's milk is high in fat, around 8.5% compared to cow's milk at 3.9%, it is an excellent source of healthy nutrients and makes wonderful cheese. Just so you know, pig's milk cheese sells for a wee bit over $1,000 a pound. Most of her pig's milk cheese is sold to high-end restaurants in the big cities. But Peggy wants to give everyone around here a chance to try it. For a limited time, she's making a small, thimble-sized cup of her pig's milk cheese available for sale in most local organic grocery stores around Madison County. Peggy Patterson's Pig Milk Cheese is another fine product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County. You can buy a thimbleful of Peggy Patterson's Pig Milk Cheese for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall, and some other places. And now back to our regular program.
We have been visiting with Executive Chef Brian Sinoskis of the Star Diner in downtown Marshall. Just before the break, Brian, we were talking about local foods and so forth, and you mentioned hanging out at farmers markets. What got you started in going to the farmers market yourself?
I like the face-to-face contact of individual farmers, and it's hard to go to each individual farm in any given day or time. So when you get a little kind of co-op like that together, it's nice to be able to get the pieces you need in one place. I mean, my day is spent already most of it in the kitchen. I'm here 12 hours a day as it is. So I spend a couple hours on roads going from place to place, then it makes it really difficult to do what I do. So,
well, I had a chance in my lifetime to travel a bit, and I've talked to a number of chefs in other countries, you know, from Greece to Germany to France, Italy, and a lot of the chefs tell me that they really don't make up their mind what they're cooking for the day until they go to the farmers markets or the fresh food markets in the mornings over there. And on the way home with their basket or whatever of groceries that they have, they sort of work out in their mind what they're going to have. And there's no printed menus, which people love that. Is that the kind of thing you do here?
Well, what we do is I have basically a core menu now that I've worked down into our favorites that are on hand most of the time. And that evolves seasonally as well. But I do a little smaller printed specials page every night. That could be, you know, anywhere from 3 to 7 things on it, depending on what I've gotten, what I've found that day. And that's a nice way to do it because it saves the servers from having to give the 10-minute speech on what all the specials are. They can touch on the fine points of each because, of course, they're educated and tasting on everything that we have. But they don't have to sit there and, you know, give you a drone for 5 minutes on what the specials are. It ends up going in and out one ear and the other. So you get to see that. And that way it saves me because we were printing the regular menus, which are double-sided, often, which wastes a lot of paper, a lot of ink. This way it's a small little half a sheet that we can do two on it. You only have to print a couple because we only really have about 4 tables any given half hour. And it's kind of nice to stay that way. And it lets us do exactly that, create more up into the moment because I don't have to print them until 5:30 once we've figured out. And sometimes, honestly, you know, not everything works out the way you want it to. You know, I've written 2 cookbooks in my past.
Oh, seriously, and, 2 cookbooks.
Yeah.
What's the name of the cookbooks?
They're both with Tupelo Honey Cafe cookbooks.
Okay.
So,
still available online someplace?
Yeah.
At the stores?
Yeah, they can still be bought in Tupelo Honey Cafe. They can be bought online. Probably find them on Amazon as well.
Okay. And you're the author?
I am. Myself and Elizabeth Sims.
Elizabeth Sims.
Yeah.
Okay, I know that name from someplace.
Yeah. Elizabeth's been kicking around Asheville for a while. But with doing that, you know, you make a whole list of what you're going to put in the cookbook.
Sure.
And then you start making them, and then you're like, oh, that really wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be. Because with the cookbook, you know, you're really creating new things. You know, our first book was really a lot of Tupelo Honey old recipes, ones that have been either on the menu or special or been through Tupelo one time or another. And then the second one we did was a little more of a tribute to the Blue Ridge as we started to expand. Made that with kind of getting more into the mountain south, you know, that kind of Sean Brock type of vision thing of really bringing the mountain south to its true food scene. Mm-hmm. And doing that was able to create new things and pay homage to some old family recipes. You know, my father's mother, my bocce, was Polish, and she taught me how to make pierogies at a pretty young age. So I was like, I need to incorporate pierogies into something. So I'm like, okay, the mountain south, rabbit's really a big thing and getting more and more popular out here. So I made braised rabbit pierogies for it. So that was something kind of fun.
Fantastic. Well, Brian, talk to me just a bit about the wine selections you have here.
Well, one thing about wine, I am by no means an expert on wine, but what I do know is what's good, what I like, and what goes well with my food. And that comes from a lot of tastings and tastings and tastings. So basically in the beginning, I designed what my menu is going to be, or a big chunk of a menu that was going to be pulled from at different times, and sat down with my vendors and was like, I know the styles of wine I want, and I want you to help me pick, because they have these tremendous inventories of wine, and it's just, I couldn't even possibly go through and taste them all. I mean, every, you know, varietal has its own nuances to it. So I was like, you guys are the experts, so I'm going to research, because I have, you know, my books, and we've all got the wonderful internet now, and things to kind of help guide towards what I'm leaning towards. And then we picked out about four wines that, you know, were suggested to be go well with each dish. And so we sat and we cooked the food, tasted the wine, did this for weeks and weeks, because the fortunate thing was we were in here, I was in here working a couple of months before we opened the doors, setting up the vendors and getting the menus together and all the shopping and that type of stuff, you know, situated. So we were able to do this, you know, a couple of times a week and taste literally hundreds of wines to compare. And, you know, I have my favorites, everyone does. We try to keep a decent but kind of a minimal inventory here. So I like to find some things that, that pair with multiple dishes. And, you know, we've done a good thing with that. So it's been a lot of fun. You know, the experience, of course, you know, anytime you get to sit around, eat food and drink wine, it's never a bad time.
That is always a good time. I'm sort of impressed, Brian, because a lot of the chefs I've talked to don't actually cook the foods and sit there and taste the wines with the foods.
Yeah, it's important to us. And then we, of course, do it with staff training. So have my vendors come in, bring all the wines, cook food for them too. So before we opened, you know, Will and I got a chance to cook the menu pretty much 30 times over between different tastings and dry runs and the service staff getting to try things, because it's important for them to understand. Anytime your staff believes and is into what you're doing and they like what they've tasted and eaten together, you can just tell when they're selling it that it's so much more poignant and it means more. You can believe them because they've actually had it, they tried it, and they like it. Anytime your staff likes something, it's going to sell. If they don't like something, chances are it's not going to sell.
Amen to that. I've been in a number of restaurants and I've asked the wait staff, you know, what's your favorite? And I have to say, probably 90% of them have never even tasted the foods on the menu,
yeah,
which I think is astounding.
Yeah, it's how do you guide people if you don't? You know, it's you can. You have a lot of people that call themselves, you know, BS artists. Mm-hmm. Like, I can make anything sound good. It's like, no, I want you to know what's good about it. Yeah. What's really going to be the nuance? You know, pick, because you can tell. I can tell you all the ingredients that are in it, but you have to taste how they commingle and what's going to stand out and what's going to, you know, what acid's going to set something else off.
It's always helpful to have really good, well-trained wait staff. You know, you ask them the question here, you think they'd say, well, gee, it depends. Do you like spicy food or not? Here's one that's better. Here's one that's not so spicy. They know,
yeah,
right?
Okay. Yeah, and they do. And if ever it comes up, fortunately, I'm only a few steps away. So if you ever have a problem, if you're not comfortable in it, or they can't, you can't explain it the way they're understanding it, you know, come get me. If I have a free moment, I'm happy to come out and talk to the table and guide you. Because I want you to, you know, I love all the food. People always ask me, you know, what's your favorite on the menu? I'm like, well, they're all my sweethearts. So it's like, you know, they're all my favorites.
Yeah.
But, you know, it all comes from my personal list. So, but I want to guide you into something that's going to give you the experience.
Yep, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I'm a big fan of trying something new every time you go out, but that's not for everyone.
Restaurants have been the environment where I've had some of my most memorable moments in my lifetime. And there's always a glass of wine or a special dish or a special environment someplace that always brings something to mind once I see these little memory ticks. It's, oh, yeah, remember when we ate this? Remember when we drank there? And so it's creating the overall experience, not just food on a plate.
Right.
It goes all together with all the other things with it. Well, when you start looking at wines to serve, what is your favorite dish on the menu?
My favorite dish, well, seeing that we have a lot of specials, it kind of evolves. One thing I really like is we make a fresh fettuccine, and we do a chef's pasta du jour with that each night. So I love a good pasta dish, and especially with fresh fettuccine, can't be beat. And every sauce made to order, you know, not sitting there and scooping out of a hot well. But the the Southern Chicken Salt and Boca is one of my favorites. We do pork belly and chicken liver mousse a lot as small plates. Those are two of my favorites. Desserts, you know, we're talking about buttermilk cheese pie and pot de creme.
Oh my goodness.
So there's lots of good ways to go. And the important thing is, you know, the proteins that we buy, you know, using veal tenderloin or jumbo sea scallops. You know, scallops, a dish like that, you can never go wrong with. And we do it differently now and again. But that's, you know, the decadence behind a U10 sea scallop is just kind of says it all there.
So if I pick the sea scallop, what would be the wine that you'd recommend here with that?
I have a couple that would go with it. Mostly I would probably go with a Sauvignon Blanc with it. But we have a Vignier that I would also suggest with it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a nice pairing. And what about your pork dish?
The belly, I would go with something generally, and the thing with the belly is it's a braised belly. We change the things that go with it a lot. So sometimes it'll come, like right now it's coming with a corn risotto, which is a little bit on the milder side. Probably with something like a Pinot Noir there, because you're going to get the fatty off the belly and something clean red wine and give a little bit of oomph to the risotto. It'll be good for me. You know, of course, my favorite wine in the bottle is the Priorat that we have. I would suggest that with any meat dish.
Which one is it?
So it's the Ferrer Bobé. Okay. And that would just be, hands down, my favorite wine in the house. but so I would drink that with a lot of things.
Food pairing with wines is a special art. At one time, I thought it was a bunch of hooey. But after about 30 years of working with it hard, I found out that there really is an art to that.
Yeah.
And so tasting it with the food the way you do it is absolutely the best way, in my opinion.
We worked a lot also with being able to pair a white and a red with things, because you get a lot of people who are just, I'm only red wine, or I'm only white wine because I don't want the, you know, the tummy issues afterwards. But, you know, so we've worked with that, and we find, you know, I've had a lot of wines that I loved in the beginning, but people just weren't drawn to them. So they kind of move through and find new ones and try things, because you know, it's all about really what the guest wants.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think that the wine choice is something that good wait staff can also help with if they're familiar with the food pairings and so forth. Most Americans don't really have a good idea. They don't have a good grasp on selection of wines, and most of them have no idea about food pairing. So if you've got a wait staff, say, hey, you know, I'm having the pork belly, what do you recommend wine? Because they know what the wines are. The customer doesn't. So they, oh yeah, you should try this. That works well out there. And that's a big service. That's a very special little tiny customer service point that a lot of restaurants miss.
Yeah. And then the nice point is by offering, you know, not all of our wines, but several of each category of wines by the glass, it allows you to give people a little taste too, so they can, you know, make sure. If you want a bottle, then you kind of, unless there's something wrong with the wine, and once it's open, you bought the bottle.
Sure.
You know, but with tasting that, you can kind of go through and, you know, find out what suits you. If you see wines, because we specifically look for wines that, you know, they're a different selection than anyone else has in town. And it's just kind of, I wanted, you know, a nice mix, like I said, a small, compact wine list, but a nice mix of interesting wines that aren't everyday wines.
I've heard a lot about your wine choices here. Pete and some others who are quite familiar with your restaurant now have just absolutely extolled the wonderful virtues of the nice wine selections you have here with the food. So that's a nice thing to have, a good reputation.
Yeah, and my key to it also is very nice pricing on it. Yeah. I want to be affordable. I want you to be able to have good wine and still be able to afford to drink it.
Folks, we've been talking today at the Star Diner with the executive chef and owner, Brian Sanoskis. Come on down to the Star Diner in Marshall sometimes and try some of the absolutely fabulous foods they have here and some of the great wines that they have. Looking forward to seeing you here. Brian, thanks again for being on the radio show with us today.
Thank you very much.
Okay, folks, we'll call that a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Addison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!